If you guys don't start thinking as men, we're going to have a lousy country.
Hello and welcome to episode 21 of The Psych Files. Michael Britt here, your host of The Psych Files.
Don't forget to check out the Psych Hero app and the Psych Explorer app. So lots of apps for anyone interested in psychology. Just go into Google, put in The Psych Files and apps, or go into Google Play or iTunes.
What you just heard was part of a longer recording of John Wayne that was made in later years of his life. I found this recording on an interesting site, which I use a lot. It's got public domain content on it. It's called Archive, www.archive.org. And, if you're interested in finding this particular piece of audio and other interesting things, just go there. And it's a very interesting site. A lot of older material, of course, but you never know what you're going to find there. Like many people, I'm a big fan of John Wayne, was, of course, during his life. I think he died in 79. Grew up watching his westerns and other films that he made. It was surprising to hear him talk like this. As you can hear, he doesn't sound very happy, as we'll hear more later. He sounds surprisingly negative. According to the notes that came with this, they claim that he was drunk during that this piece. It's certainly doesn't sound so good. I have no desire to dig into his reputation at all. As I said, a big fan. You know, it was a bit sad to hear him talk this way, but it made me think a lot about those last stages of life and what are they going to be like. When you think about the stages of life, you probably think of Erik Erikson, and he had 8 stages. Freud, of course, had his stages as well. Lots of researchers try to take life and break it into its various parts. And what are the things that we think about at these various stages of life? So I thought that I would go around and record a few people that I knew who were at these stages. In particular, I wanted to find someone who was in the last portion of life and who was not negative, a contrast to John Wayne. And so it didn't take me too long to think about a man named Roy, and Roy is 91. I don't know that you'll meet another person with as positive a perspective on life as him. So I want to end this episode by talking to him. What I want to do is just sort of walk a little bit through these stages and interview various people at these points, and then wind up by listening again to the longer version of that John Wayne audio, and then listened a bit to Roy. So, getting back to the stages of life. Well, the other person you might think about, when you think about these 8 stages, would be Shakespeare. And perhaps you remember the famous speech that starts with, "All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players." So let's think it might be interesting to listen to that speech. And instead of listening to me give that speech, I thought to myself, who do I know might give us an interpretation that might be kind of interesting? And so I turned to another podcast that I listened to that I think is quite fun. It's the Reduced Shakespeare Company, www.reducedshakespeare.com. So here is Reed Martin, a member of that company, giving us that speech.
All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They had their exits and their entrances, and one man in his time plays many parts, his act being 7 ages. At first, the infant, mewling and puking in his nurse's arms. When the whining schoolboy, with his satchel and shining morning face, creeping like snail unwillingly to school. And then the lover, sighing like furnace, with a woeful ballad made to his mistress' eyebrow. Then a soldier, full of strange oaths and bearded like the pard, jealous in honor, sudden and quick in quarrel, seeking the bubble reputation even in the cannon's mouth. And then the justice, in fair round belly, with good capon lined, with eyes severe and beard of formal cut, full of wise saws and modern instances, and so he plays his part. The 6th age shifts into the lean and slippered pantaloon, with spectacles on nose and pouch on side, his youthful hose well saved, a world too wide for his shrunk shank, and his big manly voice turning again towards childish treble, pipes and whistles in his sound. Last scene of all that ends this strange and eventful history is second childishness and mere oblivion. Sans teeth, sans eyes, sans taste, sans everything.
All right, thank you very much, Reed. Very interesting and very well interpreted. I appreciate that. Okay, so let's kind of do that trip through life. Now, of course, the first stage would be as a baby, and I didn't really want to interview a baby. I think we all know, could picture what that would sound like. Erickson would say that this stage, the first 0 to 2, let's say, would be about trust. His stages all have to do with challenges. So in this first stage, the challenge would be between trust and mistrust. One would hope, typically, that a child gets consistent, loving parenting, and as a result of that, get a sense of trust in others, a sense of being able to, later on, form relationships and holding on to those relationships. Inconsistent parenting, on the other hand, or parents who are neglectful, result in a child who does not have a sense of trust. Their needs are not met consistently, or they're moved around from foster family to foster family. And as a result, they grow up without this ability to have faith in the people that they meet and that these relationships are stable. And so you have attachment disorders. So that's the first stage. Now, the second stage, I do have a 3-year-old girl. Her name is Emily, and she's quite interesting to listen to. You'll see that her world is pretty much mommy and daddy, but she's beginning to explore a little bit. She's testing out some roles to see what she might be like at a later point in life. So let's take a listen to Emily, 3 years old. Oh, yes, and during some of this audio, you'll hear some popping and some distortion. I apologize for that. And how old are you?
I'm 3.
You're 3 years old?
Yeah.
So what do you like to do all day?
I like to play and sing and play ball.
You like to play ball and sing?
Yeah.
You want to sing it for me? Can you sing it without the piano?
No, I can't.
No.
Okay.
You like to spend the whole day playing then, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Do any work?
No, though. I just actually help people. That's all.
You help people? How do you do that?
I got the doctor. I got the doctor. She actually has a lot of doctor tools.
Okay, you got a doctor's suit with doctor tools in it, okay?
Yeah.
And what do you do with those things?
I help people.
Who's your best friend?
I love mommy.
You do?
Yeah.
How about daddy? How's he?
He loves me too.
Yeah, and you love him too?
Yeah.
All right, Emily. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Very cute little girl. Now, Erickson would talk about a child at this stage as facing a challenge of initiative versus guilt. So children are, of course, trying things out, right? And that's why we have the little baby locks on the doors, so that they don't get into things and turn things around, move things around. And, of course, they're, you know, they're making big messes and all that kind of thing. But they're showing initiative. They're testing their ability to be away from mommy and get past that separation anxiety. A little bit later in life, I've got a couple of young people I'd like you to listen to. They're around 10 years of age. This is school age. And Erickson would say that their challenge is one of industry versus inferiority. Now, around this stage, so we're talking about 6 to 12 years of age, Freud would say that children at this age are in latency. And this is considered, from a parent's perspective, one of the better stages in life, latency. So children are... Boys are interested, typically, in playing with boys and girls with girls. And, you know, there's no particular interest in those two groups. You know, never the twain shall meet. And so what they're doing is learning new tasks. And this is where my children are at now. They're about 7.5. So they're, you know, they're always touching things. They're trying things out. Sometimes a little bit annoying, but, you know, they're always touching buttons, turning things on, turning things off. But they're also building forts. Perhaps you remember this stage in your life, right? You were probably building a fort. Boys, right? Boys weren't allowed, or girls weren't allowed. I know at that age, I was building robots, and, you know, my kids just actually did that too. I didn't even mention they were, you know, banging together, nailing together things. You know, my tools are spread out all over the place because my son is, you know, nailing pieces of wood together, and he actually made a robot. So they're trying out their skills and seeing what they can make. What would happen if I took this piece of wood and put it on an angle and leaned it up against this and then put my toy on that and it went sliding down, right? There's all that kind of experimentation. So listen to these young people. Let's see. We've got Christian, who's 9 years old, and he'll talk about what he's building and that sort of thing, and the fact that most of his friends are boys. And there's Megan and Lauren. Megan's 10. Lauren is 12 years old. Now they're beginning to develop specific interests. As I mentioned, Emily's world is her mommy. But now we have some people whose world are their friends. And that's what they want to do. They want to spend time with those friends. And so we're not yet in adolescence, right? So we're sort of at the end of this latency period. Obviously, we're not quite getting into that, you know, tumultuous period of adolescence. So still a fun period, and let's listen then to what these kids are mostly interested in.
Okay, so your name is Christian, and you're how old?
9.
9 years old, okay. So tell me, who are your friends right now?
Well, pretty much my whole class and my neighbors.
Oh, okay. But do you hang out more with the boys or the girls?
Boys.
Yeah. And why is that?
Well, because I know them better and we play sports together.
Do you build anything?
Yeah, I build with like Legos and blocks and try to build really sturdy buildings.
Really sturdy buildings?
Yeah,
because you don't want them to fall down?
Yeah.
You ever been in like a science fair or anything like that?
Yeah.
Oh, tell me about that. What'd you do?
Well, the first time I did what makes evergreen trees stay green all year. And then the second year I did what's the difference between snow and ice.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. I appreciate your guys talking. So your name was what again?
Megan.
Megan, and how old are you?
10. I play sports, and I like to play the French horn and do math and science and read.
So do you ever go outside and build things or anything like that, like a fort?
Yeah, we're going to try to build a table for this building set that has, like, trucks that remote control. You get kits and you, like, sort of, they're, like, these little things and they're blocks. And then there are these balls and you get trucks, like, trucks, remote control trucks, that, like, pick them up, and there are like elevators and stuff. You put the balls in and they go up, and then sometimes they sort the balls and then you can put them in different things. And it's on the ground right now and it's not very comfortable to sit down, so we're going to make a table.
Alright, well, thanks a lot, Megan.
Mm-hmm.
Alright. Okay, so now we're talking to Lauren, and Lauren is how old?
12.
12 years old? Holy mackerel. Okay, now tell me the names of your friends.
Carolyn, Sarah, Lila, and Emily.
I didn't notice any boys' names in that group.
Not really.
Don't hang out with boys at all?
Not very much. Okay. Sometimes I do, but most of my close friends are girls.
How come?
I don't know.
Do boys do anything interesting or no?
I don't really pay much attention to them.
They're dull or weird, or what is it about them?
I don't know. I just, most of the people that I've become friends with are girls.
Mm-hmm. What do you do with those friends?
We eat together and we like hang out, and we don't usually do anything very structured.
Do you just talk a lot?
I guess.
What do you guys talk about?
Different things. What we do over the weekend.
So you just sort of hang out and talk.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes, how are you doing in school?
Good.
Yeah. Any favorite subjects?
Math and science.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you like about math and science?
I like about math that it's like there's only one right answer, and that you don't have to think of different things. Like there's not a bunch of different answers, and it's easy to tell if it's right or wrong.
So, you got any ideas on a career or what you're gonna do?
I'm interested in being a teacher.
No? How come a teacher?
I don't know. It just seems interesting. I like helping people.
Well, thanks a lot. You sound like a really fun person. Hope you have a fun summer.
Thank you.
Okay, so very interesting to hear these young people. There's Megan talking about playing with trucks. Christian about building sturdy buildings. Learning to play instruments. Good time of life. Then you hit adolescence. So Erickson would say that it's during this time, it's what he would call identity versus role confusion. So you remember those years, you're in your teens, and you're trying to figure out who you are, right? The hard times, I think, are trying to find out which social group you belong to. One of the most difficult times is typically just going to the cafeteria at school. Who do you sit with? Who will let you sit with them? An interesting time, and you know, sometimes I look around me and I see young people at the mall, and they're wearing either very, very loose-fitting clothes, or I've seen a couple of young people dressed in what I guess they call goth, which is not something that we had in my day. So, you know, it's unusual. You know, sometimes I'm tempted to smile. But, you know, I don't know. I think it's a pretty nutty thing, too, in that age, because you're just trying to define yourself. Now, there's one thing I like about a site that I'll have to find the exact reference to. One thing she mentions is something that I hope you'll identify with. You'll find that at this age that young people are also easy to get them to tell you their philosophy of life, what they believe in, what they stand for. Here we are in our teens, and yet we're ready to tell you about what we believe in and what's right and what's wrong. The site that I found says that at this age, young people substitute strong philosophies for the lack of experience that they have. I don't have an adolescent to interview at this stage of life, but I dug up some journals that I kept at that time. Of course, boys don't keep diaries, boys keep journals. Luckily, I suppose, although sometimes I read these journals and, you know, I cringe, but I look through these and they've captured what I was thinking about at the time, and it is easy to find in these journals me just talking about what I think about life, and I'm looking at one here now, and I've got a couple of pages devoted to why it's important to be objective. Let's see. Learning to stand up to what you believe in. Being yourself. What I think my future will hold. The three persons, three sort of personalities in one that I felt existed. So, you know, I don't know if you kept journals, but if you did during that period of life, I suspect that this is what you would find as well. Now, I do want to read something straight out of the journal. In addition to locking down our philosophy of life, as we move towards the end of teenagerhood, we get into what Erickson would call intimacy versus isolation. We are starting to go on our first dates and learn about the opposite sex. All of that first time stuff that's so special, so magical. So let me read you. This is a little excerpt. This is one of my earliest dates. But the thing to pay attention to is the thinking process that's going on behind this. So, I'll begin. This day is certainly one of the most important days of my life, one which I want to immortalize here on paper so that I can treasure it forever and ever. I asked Karen to go with me to a play. Most surprisingly, we never had a moment of boring silence. We each gained an insight into ourselves and each other. I can better appreciate the kind of feeling which exists between two people who respect and admire each other. After the show, we went to the restaurant where we had a milkshake. I was really unsure of how I would keep the conversation going. Yes, thanks to her, I shall treasure our moments, for there are none so special as those experienced for the first time. Okay. So there's a grandiosity at that age, but still an innocence that is neat, right? I don't know. There's a better word. Okay. Now we get into your 20s. And so what are you thinking about? Well, you're building your life. And so I have a young woman here, my name is Heather, and she has a sense of where she's going. So it's not about what do my peers think about me. It's not the typical adolescence, you know, what does so-and-so think? Does that person like me? Does that group accept me? And it's not about the first time you have relationships and the kinds of things that we typically think of. Now we're in our 20s, and listen to Heather as she talks not just about her career, where she sees herself going. She'll talk a little bit about her fiancé and notice that it's more of a mature way of thinking about a relationship. Heather, you are how old?
21. I am going full-time to college. I started a two-year college, but I was working about like 30 hours a week at the same time, so I actually went for 3 years at a two-year college and got my degree, and now I'm at a four-year school. I'll be getting my bachelor's degree in special education.
And you're working?
And I'm working.
How many hours a week?
23 and a half.
So how come you're working so many hours? What is your plan there with that?
Well, I just recently got engaged, and I just recently bought a house. So right now I'm a little poor, and I pay for school. But I pay for everything. All my bills are in my name, so I have no choice. I have to work.
So you're going to get married in a couple of years?
I'm getting married October 16th, 2009.
And a house? A new house?
I bought a new house. Mm-hmm. So we've been working on that every single day. Mm-hmm. We come home from work, we work on the house.
But pretty soon you'll be going back to college, mm-hmm. taking courses, working, and trying to fit in a little work on the house.
Yep.
So what do you see in the next 5 years?
I see myself finishing with my bachelor's and my master's, getting married, and getting a job. Kids can wait. I'm not having kids anytime soon.
Now, why is that? Why put that off for a while?
Because I think it's important to first be a little bit financially ready, because they are expensive. To get my career started, you know, I paid all this money and all this time for school. I wanted to get my degree and start working towards what I'm going to school for and what I've always wanted to do. And, you know, just kind of enjoy, like, married life for a little while before, you know, we start having kids. And plus, I'm young, so I don't need to have kids anytime soon. You know, now that we're engaged, we're going to be together forever. So we were young when we started dating. And we are still young, but we've definitely grown up a lot in the past 4 years.
What is a date like with him today?
Mostly hanging out, getting a movie, and just kind of keeping it low-key. We're not really crazy people, so mm-hmm. we just like to come home and relax and just be together mm-hmm. and just do nothing.
All right, that's all the questions I have.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Heather. That was very nice. All right, so let's move into the mid-30s, into, let's say, the mid-50s. Got a few people here to listen to. First off, Erickson would say that this is a stage of generativity versus stagnation. Now your career's rolling. It's off and going, and this is all stereotypical ideal. Maybe you have children, maybe not. But you're building that career. You're really into building up your skills. So first, let's listen to Cindy talk about her career and how she's moving up that corporate ladder. Okay, so Cindy, you are how old again?
36.
Okay, so now take me a little bit from, you got your college degree.
That's right.
In what area?
I have a Bachelor of Fine Arts in Graphic Design, which somehow or other was kind of just a stepping stone. And I kind of ended up in my current career by accident. Yes,
you're in the banking industry.
That's right, so it's not really what I intended. And I think a lot of people end up in banking for that same reason.
When you graduated college, did you intend to go into graphic design?
I did, but at the time there was a lot of layoffs in the area. So there wasn't as many jobs available. So a friend of mine got recruited to work in a bank, and she's like, why don't you come sit for an interview with them also, and you know, see if you're interested. So
as a bank teller, or
no, as an assistant manager. So I took the job.
At what age, by the way?
At 23. I was pretty reluctant, actually, to kind
because
of start.
Because you weren't initially interested in banking.
That's right. It was just kind of like temporary, and it paid better than retail. So I said, okay, well, all right, I'll try it, and then we'll see if there's something else that comes along. And here I am many years later. That's not a story that's atypical of many people that get into the banking field. It's kind of, they take a temporary job as a teller or something like that, and somehow or another it ends up being their career.
So you were at this first banking job for how long?
4 years. So I started as an assistant manager and then got promoted to branch manager.
Okay.
Then I moved to another bank as a branch manager. And then after they got acquired, I moved into the branch administration area.
The job really moved up the corporate ladder there.
That's right.
Now we're about 9 years into your career.
Right.
And then this bank decided
bank was to acquired by another bank, and the headquarters moved to an area which was farther away than I really wanted to commute. It was a 2.5-hour commute.
Okay, so you decided to leave that bank, its package?
I could have stayed, but I took a severance package.
So you're at a point in your career. Did you think about doing something different?
I did. I decided that it was a good opportunity for me to take some time off and kind of do a little soul searching. I had, you know, several months severance to kind of lean on and just kind of regroup. So I went through some dilemmas as to, do I take this as an opportunity to change my whole career direction, or do I stay in banking? And what is it that I'm really looking for? And those are very hard answers. Mm-hmm. So I think that you have to be in a position, if you're going to change careers, to be willing to take less money and have you know, more financial support at home. Just really think about what sacrifices you're going to make if you want to change your career. And I think that's hard because I think a lot of people do end up in careers that they're not completely satisfied with. So I started looking, and I came across a small community bank. I sent them my resume directly, and I went in for the interview, and I basically told them what I could do for them. I think that's really what they were looking for, was somebody who could bring something to the table. And some of the people that I worked with that are still looking for jobs, I think what's holding them back is that they don't know how to sell themselves. And that doesn't mean that you go in and tell them that you could do things that you can't do and you know, fluff yourself up to be something you're not, but be genuine and actually think about what you can offer to the company and what you're capable of. You'll find, too, that you have more skills than you realize sometimes.
At 36, you're looking ahead at probably another 30 years of work.
Right.
What do you think about when you look ahead?
I think when you're in your 20s, I think you're looking for a much more glamorous lifestyle, and things are much more materialistic and fast-paced. But I think once you start to get towards that midlife, approaching your 40s or in your 40s, certain things become more important to you, like your family, your health, and just your pace of life. I think those things, there's only so fast you can go. And I think if you're young, that's when you should go fast. I think when you start to get into your 30s and 40s, you really start to evaluate, you know, what do I really want for the rest of my life? And do I want to kill myself for another 30 years? And I think you have to change your priorities a little bit.
So does that mean that you're not looking to be bank president?
No, I don't think that's it at all. I think that you can still move ahead in your career, but you start to, I guess, look at the big picture.
Interesting.
So I think that you start to realize that keeping up with the Joneses isn't quite as important. So maybe the Louis Vuitton bag that you wanted in your 20s is you can do just as well with a $60 or $20 bag from Payless or something.
But what is it you want to accomplish in your career?
I would like to move up, you know, into senior management and possibly an executive role down the road. But you have to pay your dues. It's not going to be handed to you on a silver platter, and you have to prove yourself. So I think there's a lot of people that are still concerned about, you know, having the fancy desk in the corner office and having status to make themselves feel like they're worth something, but I think they really should kind of stop worrying about what other people think of them and start thinking about what they think of themselves and what they've accomplished. I think they're putting a lot of pressure on themselves to keep up with status, and status isn't really important. It's really just about finding happiness within yourself.
That's all I needed. That's wonderful.
Okay.
Okay, good. So thank you, Cindy. Now, this is also the stage that that I'm in. Actually, this age group could go up to as high as 65. If you're in this stage, you have learned a great deal. So you're not, unlike Heather, you know, you're not at the beginning, not building up that career. You are at a point where you've done a bunch of things, and you're sort of rolling now. I mean, you really have, you're at a point perhaps where you are can be the most productive in your life. It's ironic because we think about this stage as also the midlife and all that kind of crisis stuff. And it is a bit of a, you know, shock. It hits you somewhere between 40 and 50 where you realize that, okay, about halfway through now, how did it go? Because you think about it, go back to adolescence, right? You've got those philosophies. You've got all those strong beliefs, those rose-colored outlook on life. You're going to go and do something. And in your 20s, you've got plans. You're going to do this, going to do that, going to get my job rolling here, going to have kids at this point, going to get married and do this. You got all those things going. So you get to be about 40 to 50, and it is a sort of a natural point to look back and say, okay, what about all those plans I had? And so at this point, it can be a crisis stage for many people. So you're either going to be frustrated and unhappy, or as Erickson would say, get into a sense of stagnation, because you just feel that it's all, it just hasn't worked out. Or you're going to look at all these things that have happened, and what we all find happens is all those ideal plans that you had back in the 20s, well, it didn't quite work out exactly as you thought, which you heard Cindy mention, right? She got a graphic design degree and was thinking along those lines, but it societal factors, there just wasn't, it didn't happen along those ways, and then she sort of took a job, and the next thing you know, she's in the banking industry, but she's moving up in that banking industry. So, you know, you're looking back, you're either going to say, you know, wow, this just didn't work out at all, and stagnate. I guess I'll just hang in there until retirement. Or you're going to collect what you have gotten and say, what can I do with this? What can I share about all this? That's kind of what, sort of, as I say, where I'm at in terms of wanting to share what I've picked up over the years in terms of learning psychology, learning online, all that kind of stuff, and make sure that there's a contribution I can make here. And I think that again is part of this for people in this midlife up to 65. What can I contribute with all that I've learned, even though it hasn't all gone quite the way I might have thought it would? What's the best I can take out of that? All right, so now we reach this, what's called, and what Erickson calls late adulthood. Anywhere from, even crossover here, 55 to, obviously, death. So what's going to happen? So you think about this. What are you going to be like at this point in life? Erickson says that the challenge here is integrity versus despair. And so I've known people in this period of life who are pretty sad. I mean, they're bitter. Things didn't turn out like they wanted, and they're unhappy about that, mad that it didn't turn out, or that life has not changed the way, has gone the way that they wanted, or that the world has not changed the way they thought that it should. So let's listen to the full clip now of John Wayne and hear what he has to say. It's slightly edited because there are some expletives that have been deleted, but that's just very slight.
There is no way to be a leader in Americana except you guys. You got to control it. We haven't any chance. You, naturally, things happen like at the Columbia University and at the other mother colleges. No, it really, it's, when I went to school at the University of Southern California. Let me explain something to you. When I went there, when there was a fella in control of the college. I mean, he was the boss man there. If anybody had walked into his office and torn down a picture and did excrement in his waste paper baskets, or had written lewd words on his the pictures of his family, we as members of the college would have kicked the hell out of this organization. I can't understand how it can happen in the United States of America that this can happen and there aren't enough guys of your age. You can't stand to have this happen. Oh, Christ, I'm not trying to talk for clapping. I'm trying to talk for you guys. You better start thinking. It's getting to be ridiculous. If you guys don't start thinking as men, we're going to have a lousy country. Jesus, I have had the chance to be with guys who are with things and against things. And you know, Christ, you try as a human being to listen to both sides of everything. But there's no both sides anymore. They're just trying to wreck our country. It's time for you younger guys to take over. I don't know what to do.
All right. In his defense, we don't know whether he was tired. We know that he had cancer. He might have been giving this speech at a time when he was in pain, may have been taking medications, may have not have been the best point, you know, that day or that year to get him recorded. And we don't know that if other times he had a better perspective on life. However, it is there. Whether he reached a greater sense of peace at the very end, we don't know. But it is a good example of clues that someone's just not happy with how things turned out. So let's compare this to a few other people. I'm looking at an article from Newsweek magazine, June 25th, 2007, and near the back is an article about Morgan Freeman. It's called Take Another Swing. And so he apparently is a golfer, and he is 70 years old. A couple of interesting quotes here. And here's a person who appears to be more in that place of integrity rather than despair. A couple of quotes. You just have to take in every little moment and do all that you can to ensure a healthy future. As you mature in your career and your life, you realize that you're still in the game, but the game becomes different. I don't think there's anyone in the world who would claim to have really mastered golf or life. They're both constantly changing on you. One day you think you've got it all working, the next day it can all fall apart. But I think now is a good time, point of reflection, for me to go back and rediscover missed opportunities and different experiences. When I'm on the golf course practicing my shot, sometimes there's a bad shot, but I don't let it ruin my day. For as sure as God made little green apples, you can bet life is going to hand you another bad shot. The key is, you have to be ready to take another swing. Right. So what a wonderful attitude that is. And now I want you to listen to Roy, 91 and a half. I ask him about when he reads the obituary and sees people younger than himself that have died. Because one of the things that I've been told, when you get to that age in life, I mean, imagine you're 90 plus, your friends, and even if they're not your friends, people around you are dying. And now he's very lucky. He's still married. Here he is. Got married when he was 84 for the third time. One of the things that I've read about what makes people in his age group have difficulties is that the people around them die. And this leaves them more and more socially isolated. And yet, you'll hear him say, when I ask him about this, that when he reads about these people in the obituary, that he actually feels good about that. And listen to his reasons why. Also listen to his response when I tell him about all the health problems that he has. Because here's a man who has, as I mentioned, his hearing isn't so good. His eyesight just continues to get worse. And he has cancer. But listen to what he has to say about that. He has an absolutely, sort of an undeniable, unstoppable sense of faith and a positive attitude. He watches TV. He stays up on the latest developments. Listen to him talk about that and how important it is to be social at his age. He knows what's going on. At the very end, he'll also talk a little bit about Iraq. Very inspirational. People, when they think about you, they think about your frame of mind. First, tell me what that frame of mind is.
Oh, the frame of mind is... the number one thing I'd say with a frame of mind is see just about everything positive. Mm-hmm. Don't ever look back or think of the negative. There's a positive thing out there that you definitely can look at and look forward to achieving, say within weeks, days, or hours, or whatever the occasion might be. But be positive about, that you're going to achieve this thing or that thing. Make a trip, say, for example, or go to a party, or do this or do that. And don't think you got to sit home in a rocking chair because you're in your late years of life. Unless you're seriously ill. The second thing I'd say was keep active, Try to keep out and about and keep contact with different things and attend different things, etc. Don't start to withdraw.
Within the past 5 years, you've lost a lot of your sight.
Oh, yes.
A lot of your hearing.
Right.
You've had, you're having a battle with cancer.
Correct.
That's maybe enough for some people to say, forget it.
That's right. Chuck it in.
How do you do it?
You do it with the God-given senses that you do have that's left. That you if you can't see, you feel around for different things, and you listen. You listen more. You learn to do a lot more listening, and from that you get some of the things that you can't see.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people die in this length of period of time. Lots of them, you're close, your family. Even one of my sons died before I did. And even that, you don't let that get you down, so to speak. Don't let that make you think that you're going to die young because this one died young, because I lost what? We counted them up here one day between close relatives within the last 10 years, like cousins, sons, stepsons, brothers, sisters. I think I lost 10. Within a little less than 10 years here now. So, and you wonder, you keep going on and they passed on. Mm. So it gives you a little bit of a question in your mind, what happened? They died and I didn't.
Mm-hmm. When you look in the obituary, you see young people, you see people in their 70s who died and you're still chugging along. How does that affect you?
Oh, I feel good about it. Number one, you feel good about it. And you don't feel bad if you see, like I mentioned about this husband, my cousin here that passed away. He was 87 years of age. He'd had a heart surgery 10 years ago. So he bought 10 years of life. You look at it as these people, are just not as fortunate as I am, that they didn't live as long, but they still lived a good long life. You get into your 80s. So if you make it to your 80s, it seems to be a milestone.
Any regrets?
Do I have regrets? You know, I used to have regrets. That's a good question you bring up. When you're young, you have regrets. Yeah, I always regretted, had regrets that I was not able to go to school more, have a higher education. But you live with regrets, but you can't have everything. Some things are inevitable in your life. You can't feel that you were cheated out of something. See? Don't feel that you're ever cheated out of anything, because you have to make the good of what falls upon you. When you're 65 and you start to get older, you commence to realize that look more and more for the positive things and be happy and be content with what you have accomplished, and at least try to keep going and do what you feel you'd like to do yet in life. You just have to be out there.
You
try to be
out
there as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And don't feel as if you're old. That's the big thing. Don't feel as if you're old and you're not as you can't compete with them. Don't feel that you can't compete when it comes to conversation, because you can. You always got something to offer. Religious belief plays a big part in your positive thinking. Who was it? Which big radio minister wrote the book, Power of Positive Thinking? Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Yeah.
And this is where your faith and belief in what we are doing, even though it has its pitfalls. We hope that, you know, out of this will come a better hopes for all of us, you know, with even the Iraq war in Iraq. I don't know. I think the intent was good, but the implementation, not adequate for the job to be done. But something positive will come out of it. You got to have faith. That's where you go back. I think I'll leave it with one thing. Faith in God, faith in yourself, and faith in your fellow man.
Well, there you go. There is Roy. Some very inspiring words. Before I go, I just want to let you know about some psychology apps for your smartphone. So if you have an iPhone or iPod or iPad, there's Psych Explorer, and that is the app that brings you all the latest news, videos, audio, all chosen by me to be really representative of what psychology students should be looking at to see what's going on, what's happening, what's new, really, you know, and what's interesting. So I think you really find Psych Explorer really fun. So that's for the iPhone, Apple people. So if you have a tablet or an iPhone, iPod, check that out. Go into iTunes and just put in the Psych Files. Or just go into Google and put in the Psych Files apps, and you'll find links to those apps. So that's Psych Explorer. And there's Psych Test Hero. And that's also for the iPhone, iPod, iPad. But it's also for Android phones. So if you've got an Android phone, it's called Psych Hero, P-S-Y-C, Hero, and just go into Google Play. And if you have an Android tablet, then you can find Psych Test Hero. That's just a larger version of it. So give those a shot. Put them into Google. So that's Psych Hero and Psych Test Hero for Android and iOS smart devices. Psych Test Hero helps you get ready for your psych test. All right, so check those out. And thanks for listening. See you next time on the Psych Files.